You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Delta Quadrant Podcast, part of the Trekmate Family.
Previously on the Commander's Logs. After a brush with Q, the USS Challenger was thrown into the Delta Quadrant. On the advice of Mr. Felix, a native of this quadrant, Commander Furbob is seeking out a race of people called the Melisar, who may have developed a transwarp drive which will get the USS Challenger and their crew back to the Alpha Quadrant. On the way to the Winnowitz system, the Challenger was intercepted by the Kazon, but after Commander Furbob set the auto-destruct sequence, they fled the area. But can Commander Furbob remember the password for terminating the auto-destruct sequence? And now, part two of the Commander's Logs, Under Pressure. Computer, end auto-destruct sequence. Authorization, Furbob 47 Tango Sierra 1 Delta.
Your username and password do not match. Would you like me to email you a replacement password?
Oh, I always get that password wrong. What is it again? Furbob 47 Sierra Tango 1 Delta.
Auto-destruct sequence terminated. Have a nice day, Commander.
Well, thank you, computer. Let's find the Melisar. Helm, lay in a course, and engage.
Commander, we have a vessel approaching us on an intercept course. I believe it is from the McCulloch homeworld.
Hail them, Lieutenant.
A word of warning, Commander. The McCullochs have the ability to breathe through their ears whilst talking. You won't offend them by asking them a question whilst they talk. They will answer you.
Thanks for the warning, Felix.
Channel open, sir.
Thank you, Lieutenant. This is Commander Furbob of the Federation Starship Challenger. How may we help you?
My name is Nimmer Jineb of the McCulloch. I hope I find you and your crew safe and well today, Commander. I believe there is a 99% chance you are from the Alpha Quadrant, as your ship is similar to one we encountered a few years ago called Voyager, with Captain Janeway, I believe it was. She had a scientific background like our own. How can we be of assistance to you, Commander?
We are trying to find the Melisar homeworld.
Would you like to visit our homeworld to see our latest creation, MAT 2? We have made some improvements over the last one as someone destroyed the original. We had it made less ambitious this time. Oh, you are trying to find the Melisar homeworld. Well, looking at your current fuel situation and calculating your present speed, there is a 95% chance you will run out of fuel before you get there. You would therefore be advised to stop off at the Geno system to refuel.
Can you give us directions to the Geno system?
Their fuel is the cheapest around at the moment, as they have 10% off at the moment. Directions, you say? Ah, well, if you take the third star on the left, double it, multiply it by 47, then take away the first number you thought of, it will be 57 light years away. Unless you go through the Oklahoma Nebula, then it will halve your journey, so that will be, 13 light-years, but you will only have a 3-in-1 chance of making it through alive.
Thank you for your help, Nimmer Jineb. We'll be on our way.
You're very welcome, Commander. Goodbye.
That was hard work. Number one, plot a course through the Oklahoma Nebula and engage.
Commander, we'll be hailed again.
Put it on the main screen. Uhura.
Sir, it is audio only.
Oh, okay. Put it through.
Hello, and welcome to the Geno system. I'm your host, Oneg. This conversation is brought to you by Boobies Breast Implants, the number one choice of female Federation officers. Buy two implants and get a third one free in this limited offer. Boobies come in three sizes, 1, 2, or 3 BSH. That's British Standard Hands. Need a breast? Then get the best. Boobies.
What the... Oneg, we need fuel for our warp engines. Can you help us?
Will Commander Furbob take enough fuel to reach his destination? Or will he run out before getting there? Which system are you heading for, Commander?
The homeworld of the Melisar, but I cannot pronounce the name of the system.
Ah, in your language, that would be the... the Pigeon Chief system. But why would Commander Furbob want to go there?
We are hoping that they have a transwarp drive that will get us back to the Alpha Quadrant.
Does the Commander know that the Melisar operates a bartering system? Will he know what she will accept in exchange for a transwarp drive?
I don't.
Can the Challenger crew sing or dance? Will they be able to perform under pressure? Find out when Commander Furball arrives at the... the Pigeon Chief system.
Commander's Log, Supplemental. After refueling in the Geno system, we have made our way to the Melisar homeworld, and are attempting to make contact. This is Commander Furbob. Is this the... the Pigeon Chief system?
I thank you, Commander. You honour us by using our language. Would you may call our system Fargo, if that makes it easier for you? You may call me Asylum, the ruler of this quadrant. I believe you are looking for a transwarp drive.
Oh, news travels fast in this system.
We will fit a transwarp drive to your ship, Commander, but there will be a price.
Name it. We really need that drive to get home.
Who amongst your crew is the best at performing under pressure?
Well, that would be Sub-Commander Teapot. She is less likely to be emotionally compromised.
Good. Bring her down to the planet, and we will be happy to try her out. Thank you, Commander. If all goes well, you should have your transwarp drive fitted within the week. Asylum out.
Teapot, Mr. Swarf, let's get down to the surface and find out what she wants us to do.
Hello, Commander. Mr. Swarf. And the delightful Sub-Commander Teapot.
Hello, Asylum. I hope this task will not be too dangerous for Teapot. I need her 100% fit for duty tomorrow.
I can assure you, Commander, no harm will come to her. The audition process is painless.
Audition process? Audition for what?
Well, audition for our local performing arts production of We Will Rock You, of course.
We Will Rock You? You mean the 21st century musical with songs by the pop group Queen?
Yes, Commander. Can Teapot perform Under Pressure? By Queen and David Bowie.
Teapot, if there is any way I can get you out of this, I will. But we still need that transwarp drive.
Do not worry, Commander. It is actually one of my personal favourites. Second only to Bohemian Rhapsody. It was a great collaboration between two giants of the late 20th century musical entertainment industry.
Sometimes, Teapot, you do surprise me.
The Sub-Commander is remarkably good at singing, sir.
Take out those earplugs, Mr. Swarf. You really don't need them.
I would disagree, sir. Vulcan singing is the wrong pitch for Klingons. It can burst your eardrums if unprotected.
Pressure. Pushing down on me. Pressing down on you. No matter as for. Oh, Commander, she is perfect for the part. You'll have your transwarp drive fitted by the end of the week.
Thank you so much, Asylum. Is there anything else I can offer you in exchange?
Well, it is one thing, Commander. You wouldn't have a good recipe for scouse, would you?
It's my favourite food. I'd be pleased to let you have the recipe.
That's okay. It's the terror of knowing what this world is about. Watching some good friends screaming, let me out.
Commander's Log, Supplemental. After an excellent meeting with the Melisar, they fitted the transwarp drive to the Challenger and made us promise to return to the Delta Quadrant in the future. We have been able to keep our rendezvous with Deep Space Nine and are about to disembark ready for the talks. You might want to put some oil on them hinges.
Hello, Commander. I'm Odo, Chief of Security here on Deep Space Nine. I've been asked to take you to Holosuite 2.
Ah, hello, Constable. Why Holosuite 2?
I just do as I'm told, Commander. I don't question my orders.
Very good, Constable. Lead on. I believe you're a changeling, Odo.
That is correct, Commander. Want to make something of it?
Well, that's your job, Odo, not mine.
Here we are, Commander. Holosuite 2. Enjoy.
Oh, I thought the holosuites were supposed to be bigger than this. Looks like the inside of a janitor's cupboard. Hang on a minute, I...
Hello, Commander.
Admiral Janeway.
I believe you had a run-in with Q. Don't think you've seen the last of him.
Thanks for the warning, Admiral.
We have a little time before the talks start, Commander. Are you wearing your briefs, Verbob?
Briefs? Yes, Admiral, but what has that got to do with the talks?
Because I want to debrief you, Commander.
Oh, Admiral.
Oh, Commander.
You're listening to the Delta Quadrant, a Star Trek Voyager podcast. This is a podcast where we review episodes of Star Trek Voyager in the order in which they were broadcast. Tonight's episode is Demon. This is Matt from Arizona.
I'm Ben from Arizona.
And I'm Gino in Arizona. Or Oklahoma, whatever.
They're the same thing. So Melissa is having a temporary stay in the brig, but we may or may not let her out later. We'll see.
It's still up in the air. I don't know. You guys kept me down there for a while, and she would come down every once in a while. And what she did, okay, she made a fresh batch of cookies, and she sat them down, like, 2 feet right outside of the brig, and let them get cold. I didn't get to have any of them.
So Gino has...
I'm over it. Whatever.
No, so over it that Gino has overridden Ben and my access codes for the brig, so he is the one controlling the key, so it'll be up to him whether Melissa joins us later or not.
Guys, those panels come off the wall really easily down there.
I know. We'll have to use something other than spit and baling wire to put them together next time.
If they built this ship out of anything more than that, I'd be surprised.
But that's okay, because we're here to review Demon. We're coming down to the end of Season 4, so without further ado, let's get on with it. It's Demon. Short synopsis. Voyager, desperately low on fuel, finds deuterium on a highly hostile Demon-class planet. This is the 24th episode of Season 4 of Star Trek Voyager, first aired May 6, 1998. Teleplay by Kenneth Biller, story by Andre Bormanis, and directed by Anson Williams, a.k.a. Potsy from Happy Days. The guest stars this week include... just one lowly one, Alexander Enberg as Vorik. Gino, you have the notes this week, so whenever you're ready, take us into Demon.
Oh, yes. Well, as our show opens this week, Voyager is encountering some power loss. We get to see the return of B'Elanna Torres in an actual torso shot for the first time in a while, and she and Vorik are walking around engineering. Then we get to the bridge.
Ship is gray, Captain. We've cut power to decks 4 through 9. Replicators, holodecks, and all other non-essentials are offline. Remaining systems are operating at 20% capacity.
Tom, how long can you keep us flying?
With the deuterium supply this low? Even at 1/4 impulse, we'll be out of gas inside a week.
Everyone redouble your efforts. Keep your eyes open for new sources of deuterium. Tuvok, Chakotay, I want recommendations for further methods of conservation. Harry, you and I will give them a hand in geophysics. See if we can't synthesize a substitute fuel. In the meantime, we stay in gray mode. Anybody's got any other ideas? I'm listening.
We could set up a bicycle in the mess hall, attach a generator, pedal home.
Now, why didn't I think of that?
And I volunteer Harry to take the first shift.
And everybody laughs. Oh, isn't Harry a joke?
Well, he's going to be a joke later because he gets most of the acting this week.
I think that's what they were trying to do here initially. It's like, hey, remember Harry Kim? Remember how much of a dork he is? Huh?
Don't we all like him still? He's totally not the Wesley Crusher of this series.
Yeah, I didn't think they needed to make Tom and Harry go through this. It seemed really silly to start with. Didn't really like it. But I do like the fact that the resources are low and they got to find something.
I was going to say, this feels, I feel like this problem should have been a Season 1 problem, to be honest with you, because this should be happening more often, but I'm glad they're finally tackling it, if not 3 years too late, in my opinion.
Well, I'm glad they're going back to it. It's still a reminder that throughout all the different things that happen, Voyager still has essential problems with power.
So I got a question. Would you think about this? Would you like to have a once a season episode where Voyager is low on resources and oh no, maybe they'll get them, maybe they won't, and save the day? Seven of those, or would you rather just have one where this that it occurs, and maybe it comes in season four, but it does come, and I think it's at least interesting that they're going there with it.
Well, that's kind of a double-edged question, right? Because there's the potential of, you know, having it once a season be really like a retread, but there's also the problem that I think Voyager has where, for a ship lost in the Delta Quadrant, they seem to have it pretty well. I mean, I'm not asking for it to be Battlestar Galactica, but I'm saying that it should be there should be some problems inherent with not having a starbase or the Federation there to resupply them every now and then. So there's no good answer to that question because it's very pointed and plain. I think that they should have explored some issues like this more often in different ways. Maybe have a period of time where, or a series of episodes where Voyager is like low on resources or something like that, and having to deal with that over the course of several stories, and not having that be the main problem, but having that being a background issue.
I'm glad you mentioned Battlestar Galactica there, because I feel like they kind of did it better. I kind of want it to be more Battlestar Galactica-ish. I want them to have problems. I don't want them to have the same we're going to run out of gas problem every season, but I want something similar.
Well, here's what I mean by that. I agree that I think Battlestar Galactica did the resource problem better. I'm just saying that, you know, I understand that Voyager is a little supposed to be more of the lighthearted show, more of a return to the original series, that sort of thing. So when I say not like Battlestar Galactica, I mean it doesn't have to be so dark and foreboding as Galactica does, but it should handle the resource problem in a manner that's similar story-wise.
Yeah, but I don't know about that because there's only two episodes in Battlestar Galactica where resources are an issue. They do other things on there that are, you know, talk about limitations, but not about resources. We only have one where they attack the Cylons and the mining areas, they get a ton of resources there, and then two is the algae planet. So I don't think it's a fair comparison there. And
no, I do think it's a fair comparison because there's much more than that. There's also the episode with the water that's like the third episode in.
Yeah, but that was a sabotage. That was a sabotage.
It doesn't matter, but it had to do with low on resources. So, you know.
Yeah, but not due to the fact that they're all by themselves and needing to find them from place to place. I just don't find that a fair comparison, and I don't think it's quite correct. I do, however, not think that this is not what this episode's about at all.
I think it's the
MacGuffin map, so let's go with it.
It's not what this episode's about, but I will say this should have been a recurring problem, because to have it, this one episode like, oh, we dealt with it, like it's never going to come up again, that's not good writing either. It's not.
Okay. I don't know what you mean by that's not good writing. I think it's written very well, dude.
No, I think this episode's written well, but just to say that this is a problem that never recurs or never is a constant battle, that's poor planning. That's poor execution on the story, on the show's premise.
So you wanted an intricate issue where they're going to deal with it on a regular basis. It's going to be highly dramatic, and we'll deal with it and kill it and just beat it to death. I just don't
agree with that mentality. Did you not listen to a word I said over the last 10 minutes?
I did, but I just don't think that you're being fair to it.
No, I don't think you did. I said that it didn't need to be a central focus of every single episode, every single season. I said it could be a background issue. That
I know. That'd be very intricately woven into the plot. It'd be like a C-plot throughout the whole show. I get it. That'd be great, but it's not what we get, and it's not a fault of this episode. It has anything to do with the concept of the story.
No, it's not a fault of this episode. I'm just, this is an opportunity for me to comment on Voyager as a whole, and God forbid we should have intricate storytelling. I mean, who'd have thought of that? That's an innovation, but let's move on, Gino.
Speaking of storytelling and C-plots, Neelix and Tuvok bump into each other in the corridor as Tuvok takes all of Neelix's stuff because it's non-essential. Even Neelix's blankie. Well, Chakotay meets Seven in Astrometrics, telling her to shut it down because it's inefficient. She says, your idea of inefficient and my idea of inefficient are very different. And just then, she gets an alert that informs her they've found deuterium. However, Chakotay informs her that it's a Y-class or demon-class planet. And we get our opening credits. So what do you think so far, guys, aside from the 10-minute tangent that we just went on?
No, I like the premise. It's good. It's interesting. And I'm interested to see where this goes. I'll say that.
Yeah, Chakotay said that entering planet standard orbit would be disastrous. It wasn't that disastrous, but I did think that was weird. They got into suns and into the corona of suns on Next Gen, and that didn't quite sit right, though. I was kind of like, that's odd, but...
Yeah, I think they were. He was trying to make it sound more dangerous than it would be, because when we do go to the planet, it's a very quick, some modifications were made, we can go now, the end.
Well, that's Voyager for you.
What I do like, though, is that Seven of Nine is, you know, doing her thing. She's not bucking authority here just to do it because she's being stubborn. She's doing it because she has a good reason to, and she proves her point. And I'd like it when they use her in that fashion. That was really nicely done. You know, Chakotay is by the book, ran right on his back following, little puppy dog following Janeway's orders, not thinking about the greater good, and here she is, you know, making things work and saving the day here. You know, this is like this is a well-played move by her.
Well, yeah, and credit to her. I mean, if the astrometrics hadn't been functional, we wouldn't have found the demon planet. Probably not.
If astrometrics hadn't been functional, we wouldn't have found the Hirogen network.
Well, that's true, but
exactly.
I'm talking about, like, her refusing to shut down astrometrics in this, since they wouldn't have found a solution to this problem. And what do you guys think of the classification of demon planet? I think it's a little more superstitious than Starfleet's normally used to calling their classes a planet. But okay,
it's not ironic at all that it was coming from Chakotay, though.
Yeah. So, and now we got a little bit between Neelix and Tuvok. I like that. It's nice, but I do like where it's going, and we'd like to mention that Neelix is quick on his feet. He's got some... He's a resourceful character, right?
Absolutely.
You know? No, but here's the thing, though, is, like, does Tuvok have to come out with, like, such a supreme D-bag in this scene? I mean, like, what's it gonna matter if the guy takes his pillow? I mean, Jesus Christ, dude.
It is non-essential.
It was great, though, because Neelix just left it with him, so he's gotta give it, go put it all away and everything now. I thought that was funny, too.
Dude, he probably just threw it in a rep.
I just would have been like, up yours, Mr. Vulcan. What are you gonna do to me? Throw me in the brig?
Yeah, it's a place to sleep right now.
Yeah, we'll see that, though, later at the end of, kind of towards the last scene of Neelix, is that just doesn't cross his mind. He's just genuinely just a nice guy.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
putting it there yet. We're not there yet.
But this scene is part of it too. I mean, he just finds a solution instead of getting pissed off about it. But
oh yes,
I know. I just say, like, I was just using this opportunity to say that this is one of those instances where I think Tuvok is way too Vulcan-y.
You gotta make him extra Vulcan-y, especially with Vork around now. You got two Vulcans on the ship. You gotta make him stand out.
I know, but
it is nice to see Vork, though.
It doesn't bother me that much, but it's worth pointing out.
Oh yeah, I feel like we all have a connection with Vork. I mean, we watched him go through Pon Farr. That was emotional for all of us. Yeah.
Plus, little out of show knowledge. It really helps when there's nepotism at work.
That's yeah. Right.
Never forget that. He does come back more. It does seem like he comes back more than anybody else.
Yep.
Like I said, nepotism at its finest.
At its finest. Well, Janeway's ordered some adaptations to the shields to withstand getting close to the demon planet. That was quick. While they attempt to beam up deuterium. This attempt, unfortunately, causes an explosion that brings down the transporter room. So they decide to have a staff meeting. In which Janeway suggests...
Love it how Seven does the carry out of the wounded transporter chief.
I could hear Whitney Houston.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Well, Janeway suggests that going back to one-quarter impulse and staying their course is the way to go. However, Harry Kim has another idea.
Captain, maybe I can help.
Harry, the bicycle thing was just a joke.
I've been thinking, with Tuvok's shield modifications and a few tweaks to an environmental suit, I could take a shuttle to the surface and mine the deuterium from there.
Need I remind you, Ensign, that there is no environment less hospitable to humanoid life than a Class Y.
Actually, Tuvok, no, you needn't remind me. What's the alternative? Resume course, creep along a quarter impulse, hoping we'll find fuel before we end up dead in the water. We've got deuterium within arm's reach. We can't let the opportunity slip away without at least trying.
He's got a point.
He wouldn't be able to communicate with us if you got in trouble. And until we can get transporters back, we couldn't beam you out.
Even with modifications, it wouldn't be long before your suit began to corrode. Exposure to that atmosphere could kill you within minutes.
I know the risks.
Even if I agreed, I'd never let you go alone.
Of course not. That's why I'm volunteering my good buddy Tom here to go with me.
You know, for a man who's died 50 times already, he really is eager to, like, add another notch to his bedpost, you know?
I gotta say, though, on behalf of men everywhere, Harry Kim, here's your man card.
That's one thing I will support, is that I'm about to dump on Harry Kim a lot in this episode, but the one thing that he does do that I like is stand up to Tuvok, who really, like I said from the thing before with Neelix, is really being... I would almost say Enterprise arrogant in this episode, but...
He finally learns how to take it, though. That's the thing about kids who get teased. It's that they don't react well to it, and that causes the bullies to tease them more. If you do what Harry Kim has done here and said, yeah, I've been a kid in the past, and now I'm taking it, and I'm doing this brave thing, what? People look at him completely differently.
And What's more, he does it in front of Janeway and Chakotay, the two senior-most officers on the ship.
Just after Paris made a joke on the bridge and everybody kind of giggled, oh, Harry, you're such a kid. Mm-hmm. But Janeway did an immediate 180. She's like, okay, I respect your opinion, and if you want to go do it, go do it. I'm behind you.
Yeah, I mean, she's low on options, of course, but I still, you know, I like the staff meeting. I think that's all great, and I liked how they set it up and everything. There's only one part about this I really can't stand, and that is that they have to tell us after they show us. Like, I didn't like that scene in the corridor between Tom and Harry where Tom's like, what was that all about? And Harry's like, well, you know, this is why all of a sudden they're going to have a change of, you know, demeanor. Like that so much.
I tried to justify that. You know, I'm thinking maybe it's for the viewers who aren't caught up. You know, just coming into this episode, why is everybody making fun of Harry? But, yeah. You know, I don't know. I think they just had space to fill, maybe.
Well, here's the thing, Ben. I'm kind of with you on that. I can see your point. But I'll let Harry have this moment because he ain't never going to have another moment like this in the next 3 years.
So. I know. But I see that's what makes me go, why did they do this and then show us so well and then tell us so terribly and then never... Like, what was up with you? Did they just see his performance by the end of this and say, we just can't ever take this risk
again? Well, you do remember what I told you when we did the Killing Game, right? Like, the writers at this point, they're done with Harry Kim.
I know. Well, it seems like they're trying to give him another go, but
it's different writers week to week, but the main staff is done with Harry Kim.
I don't know. It just really stinks. I just love the setup to this whole episode, right? Up until this... That is very next scene, you know? So, that's all.
And, okay. his monologue at the end, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Well, Tom and Harry are in a shaky shuttle headed to the surface. Tom's fancy flying skills get them there in one piece. That is giving Harry a deserved jolt. I like that moment. You know, Tom gives him a little smirk like, yeah, I didn't have to land us so hard.
You mean the Mark moment? I did like that. Yeah.
Well, it's almost 500 degrees Kelvin on the surface, but the suits will hold. Harry gets the chance to use a dated 90s catchphrase, and they enter a cave to find highly viscous metallic compound packed with deuterium.
Wait, could you pause for a second? Because which catchphrase are you referring to? I don't remember this.
Did you catch that moment? Tom mentioned something about the planet, and Harry goes, lame.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
He should have gone, as if. Let's go get some deuterium.
Two Valley Girls on a demon-class planet looking for fuel. That's
Folly Shore here, that would have been perfect.
No, but according to Ben here, like we're going through all the like the 90s sitcom colloquialisms because we had there's nothing wrong with that the other week. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, before they decide to munch on some grindage, Tom goes around to check another spot and makes a joke, but Harry doesn't respond. Tom turns around, and Harry's gone. He reaches into the liquid metal and pulls out Harry after seeing some bubbles. I mean, that was kind of a guess. Maybe I'm just going to reach in, and there he is. But he pulls Harry out of the goop, which I wanted to pause for a moment and talk about this stuff. It's 500 degrees Kelvin, okay?
Yes.
And this metal is 12 degrees. I can't ask how is this possible, because it's
oh, you mean metal not heating up? I just like, you know, not, I mean, I guess I don't know. Science wasn't like, no, that's not, I don't know. I mean, that's Star Trek, you know. They say in Enterprise there's like 200 more elements than we currently know on the periodic table. Sure. At some point, you just got to give them that there are things that we, you know, have no idea about. It's our imagination going here. Maybe it takes that hot to, you know, get the metal liquefied. I don't know. It's not a big deal.
I kind of like the look of this silver stuff. However, like when I remember some of the first times I saw this episode, I was half expecting Robert Patrick to come out of it.
There it goes. I was waiting for the Terminator 2 reference to happen. I tried to grab a clip just so I could have Arnold saying, "Emimetic polyalloy, liquid metal," but I didn't have time to grab it. Ugh. Well, Kim's suit has been compromised, and Tom starts to take him back to the shuttle. He makes a few comments about how heavy Harry is, and that the suit is draining fast, when all of a sudden, Tom's suit gets compromised. And before they can take two more steps, both of them are out of oxygen and collapse.
Well, let me just put something forward, and this is something, one of those geeky Star Trek things that's always kind of irked me a little bit, is that in 300 to 400 years, the EV suits are still incredibly flimsy. Like, they fail all the time.
That you have to be able to move around in them. I mean, it can only be so protective.
Well, you know, but don't, well, again,
but you seem to have a high failure rate, though.
Yeah. You would think that they would come up with some Star Trek BS, like, alloy that they're made out of that's durable and light, but, you know, then you wouldn't have the tension, I guess. But
right. The real question is, why show us the time they fall in? He thought he tried to see his reflection. I don't know.
Are you kidding me? It was like, you know, Frodo looking into swamps on the way to Mordor.
See, okay, I'm glad you guys thought of this, because I want to know what happened exactly, because the way they show, we don't see Harry Kim falling in. The camera stays on Paris, and all of a sudden just Harry's gone. So did like a hand come up from the blood and like grab him in, or what happened? Did he try to like touch it and then get sucked in, or
good point. I found myself missing that piece too. I wanted to see how he fell in. So
well, and was Harry just a clumsy, you know, D-bag and like just tripped on himself? I don't know. But
I'll be honest with you, I'm glad to see him both die so we can stop hearing these lame jokes and get back to figuring out what's going on with Voyager.
No, but we're gonna get lots and lots more Garrett Wong acting.
This I understand, but I was more interested. I started forgetting about the acting, like, and not caring as much once I started enjoying, you know, the mystery and the story of what was going on. But up to this point, I'm just like, you know, it's just art, them being them, you know, it's Paris and Paris being Paris and Kim being Kim, and them kind of sucking, and I'm not really interested because the metal's just metal to me right now, so I'm like, thank God they're dead, let's go.
So in other words, you were saying lame?
Lame.
Lame. Well, Tom and Harry are dead. And we didn't even get that stereotypical moment of, you know, almost making it to the shuttle. I mean, they were probably still kind of far away.
Well, 30 seconds is not a lot of time.
Right. Well, I mean, they went down quickly. I mean, that suit drained. Oh, unfortunately, the people on Voyager have no idea that this is happening, because on the ship, Neelix is trying to convince the Doctor to let people crash there after Tuvok gave him the brilliant idea. Chakotay's on Neelix's side, and the Doctor hates it. Chakotay's answer to the Doctor's objection is that they could shut down the Doctor's program to save a little bit of power, once again showing that they still don't consider the Doctor a person.
Yeah, well, this in this instance, I agree with you. It felt like keep your place hologram.
Ah, exactly. Yeah. I'm so glad Chakotay got to do it, because it's like, you know, I don't know, it just felt good that he told the Doctor to shut up. I don't know why. But then end his existence. That's just great. I enjoy that.
That being said, like, I do like him in this episode, and we were talking earlier about how Neelix is just the perpetual nice guy, but I'll also say this, he can make an obnoxious house guest.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he knew what he had to do to get his way, right?
Well, right, but still.
And, well, the doctor also knew how to express how disappointed he was not to have things as normal as they were, but we'll get there in a minute. We'll talk about it when we get there.
I was just going to say, I always laugh at the point where Neelix is about to start singing the Klingon opera.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, fortunately, this scene gets cut short as Janeway calls Chakotay back to the bridge. She's a little concerned that Tom and Harry have been gone a long time. Chakotay volunteers to take another shuttle, but Janeway doesn't want to lose him, too, so her suggestion is to land the entire ship.
Hey, man, I like that. That's like, you know, balls to the wall, commit yourself. Well, that's it, we're going!
It is, but here's the thing, right? They make such a big deal about how they're running out of power, this, that, and the other. So the solution, it's a ballsy one, but it's a not thought out one, I would say, because, you know, land.
I don't know about that, though. I mean, thought out maybe, but the thing is, you're desperate. There's no time to think and mull something over.
I know. I'm trying to give both sides their due course, because by landing this ship with no power left, you may not be able to blast off, and then you're stuck on this inhospitable planet.
Hey, you know, you're dead. I mean, die in space or die trying.
But then again, Kirk did say risk is part of the business.
There we go. And it's like, you know, this is reminds me of in Unity when she's like, we're going to board that Borg ship. You know, she just goes for it, dude. I love that about her.
Right. Well, you know, I'm just saying it's one of those decisions that is cool, but you think about it a little bit and you go, you could do a head cock.
Man, I like it. Land the ship. And besides, we've seen gray mode, now we get to see blue mode, so...
That's one thing I will give it, Gino, is that for that's a feature they introduced way early in season 2, and
right, when they land on it
in the 37s.
Yeah, 47s. 37s, thank you.
37s. So, but you know, the landing of Voyager is a really cool idea, but unfortunately, it became a lot like the Enterprise D saucer separation, where they introduce it early and they use it maybe 4 times and out the 7-year run.
Yes, and. Honestly, I feel like they should make a bigger deal out of landing the ship.
Yeah.
I think this episode, you didn't think it was a big deal?
I loved it. It was a big deal, but it should have been more. This should have been a 2-part episode. I would have loved to have seen this episode stretched out.
I could have seen this episode stretched out.
As long as it didn't involve more Harry Kim acting.
No, it would have had to. Maybe I could have been okay with that.
No, it wouldn't have had to because, like, well, we'll talk about it, but there's another person affected by this whole thing that has a much better acting ability that they could have used.
Yeah, B'Elanna.
I think it's a good idea. You know, it's like combining all your resources. You know, like, that way you don't... Plus, they said the atmosphere is toxic, so...
But my original...
What does Vorik say in all of this? I want to know.
Okay.
Well, he says to keep our cool.
Well, yeah, okay. All right. Well, Code Blue people, we're going in. Chakotay takes the con, and the ship lands. Tuvok reports that a bunch of systems are damaged, and now that they've landed, they won't be going back up anytime soon. So, we're here. We're on the demon planet. Good luck, everybody.
Hopefully the life support systems don't go out, everyone.
Yep. Well, B'Elanna stops Chakotay in the corridor. She really wants to go, but he won't have it because she doesn't have a cool head. So, B'Elanna suggests taking 7. Because who has a cooler head than 7? I mean, what are we gonna do? You gotta have 7 more in the episode, sure. And I don't think Roxanne Dawson was physically up to doing a lot of acting yet, right?
Well, no, because you know it takes a while to recover from pregnancy. Here's the thing, though. I like B'Elanna's reasoning. However, you can't help but wonder, Gino, you love conspiracy theories. I mean, yeah, 7 should go. I mean, yeah, she has a cool head, and if she ends up dying, it's really not gonna bother me that much.
Yeah, B'Elanna wants 7 out of the picture. I mean, she's pretty, and the doctor would like her, too. I mean, go on. Go. Class White Chakotay, you can go, too. I don't care. But the doctor is being a little bit vindictive. He's banging around instruments and singing really loudly. And Neelix is asking to make things more comfortable. I mean, I know you were talking about how he can be an annoying house guest. I don't think his requests were unreasonable. He's like, I got to work in 4 hours. I know it's my fault that I should have planned better, but the lights are still on. You're singing loud. Give me something.
He's an obnoxious house guest, but then again, the doctor's not a great host either. Oh, so it's both ways. He's
being a child. Ah.
I'm not sure, man. I think the doctor is ridiculous here. I mean, if he was a real person, you would punch him.
It's
the fact that he's a hologram that somehow he gets away with this. It seems like anybody else would not go down with him.
Well, you know
for
what?
That reason it's good that we've got Neelix and no other person on the ship because they would have just turned him off.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, I agree what you're saying in principle. However, I mean, just from the characterization of the Doctor, especially from the first couple of seasons where he is already this irascible, cantankerous sort of person. I mean, I could see him acting this way. Is it like a charming way he's acting? No, but it's well acted, at least when you're getting a Picardo performance. So, and it
you
doesn't
dang
last.
Kids, get out of my sick bay!
And you know what? It doesn't last the whole episode, so that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Doctor's not backing down, and Neelix suggests a sing-along. One bellow from the Talaxian, and the Doctor relents.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing a lot of switching back and forth between scenes going on here. I feel like we do have a solid A and B plot that are cohesive to the story, but not to each other.
Yeah, that's true.
No, they're not to each other, but at least they're born out of the same circumstances, which is exactly. Voyager's low on fuel and is on this planet.
Yeah, and they're giving a comedic aspect to the seriousness, which is the surface of the demon planet, on which Seven's acting a little bit jumpy. She and Chakotay find the shuttle, and it's unoccupied. And open. I mean, I understand you had to open it to get out, but did they protect the inside just as well as the outside?
They always leave the shuttle bay doors open, man. They do that quite
often. But it opens up a couple of logical errors, because, you know, if you leave it open, they say, what is the temperature on this planet? It's like 1,000,000 degrees or something. I'm exaggerating, but it's really freaking hot.
500 Kelvin.
So wouldn't that, like, melt the consoles and everything inside? I'm just saying.
I don't know. I don't know what the consoles made out of. All I know is they explode a lot. It's a real problem. They got
Well, there you go. I mean, like, they're real flimsy to begin with. Like, a little jolt to the ship makes one of them explode.
I just think they have a critical flaw with the consoles. It's just one critical flaw that Starfleet seems to not be able to understand, which is, you know, put a fuse in there.
They don't know what a circuit breaker is.
Yeah, it's just called a fuse. They haven't invented that, or at least they forgot about it somewhere, you know, between here and then.
Yeah. I guess Starfleet wasn't built by an automotive company.
No.
By the way, 500 Kelvin is 440 degrees Fahrenheit, or 227 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, so
it's not exactly 1,000,000 degrees.
That's,
well, no, I was exaggerating. But I was just saying it's really freaking hot. That's double the boiling point, by the way. Fahrenheit.
It's hot. I mean, you've got, you know, straight from solid to gas kind of situations at that temperature.
Mm-hmm.
With water, yeah.
Yeah. Well, as Chakotay uses his expert tracking skills and finds footprints, because, you know, we needed a stereotypical Native American moment here now and again.
It would have just been better if he would have said, you know, my people. Whatever.
My people.
He would have
picked up some dirt and, like.
Well, the best stereotypical moment is still, you guys weren't here for it, but remember Basics Part 2, you're like, you're stuck with the one Indian who can't make fire out of rubbing sticks together, and I'm like, oh, good lord.
Yeah.
I mean, I swear to God, I'm not trying to be racist at all, but they did every stereotype except giving him a casino. You know, they did every other generic Indian stereotype, or Native American stereotype.
Is that a stereotype outside of Arizona?
I live in Oklahoma.
That's what I'm asking.
Indian casinos are everywhere.
Okay. Just curious.
There's plenty in California, too.
Well, just as they're looking around, Seven finds the same metallic fluid. And just before she can take a sample, Chakotay suggests they find Tom and Harry first.
Yay, Chakotay! Saves the day.
A little. Because Rock gives away just underneath him. And I thought he was going to get caught under it, and we're going to have a Travis Mayweather moment. But he starts to fall, and Seven grabs him. She can't hold him very well, and just then, an arm grabs Chakotay and helps pull him up. It's Tom, and he's not in his environmental suit. Why, Tom's just fine.
Our suits were corroding, our lungs were burning, we were suffocating.
You know what they say about your life? Passing before your eyes? Well, it's true. I was finally getting past puberty when suddenly I lost consciousness. I don't know how long I was out, but the next thing I knew, I was awake and I was breathing normally. And I looked over at Harry. He was breathing normally, too, with his helmet off. And we just looked at each other. And we just started laughing. I know it sounds crazy, but it was an exhilarating experience.
His vital signs are normal. Apparently he has adapted.
Just the same, we'd better let the doctor take a look at you. Chakotay to Voyager.
I've already tried that. The comm signal can't get out of the caves.
Then we'll call again when we get back outside.
I'm telling you, Chakotay. It was an amazing experience. It's like when you're a kid who's afraid of the water and you suddenly realize that you can swim. Go ahead. Take your helmets off. Try it.
I'm glad you're feeling all right. But none of us should be taking any risks until we know exactly what's going on.
Don't tell me that a big, tough guy like you is afraid of a little poisoned atmosphere.
Where's Harry?
He's further inside the cave. We found a huge cache of deuterium.
Let's find him and get you two back to the ship.
Whatever you say, boss. But I'm telling you, we could breathe this air forever.
Okay.
I just gotta say,
a nerd moment.
Be wary of the person who describes anything as the best moment in your life, and you should try it too.
Yeah, come on, man. Everybody's taking their helmet off on a Class Y planet. Come on. Let's make this happen.
It is a little strange that Paris, I mean, just thinking about like him being a Starfleet officer, that he would just be, he's so out of character, you would think. You know, you would think he'd be freaking out, not so much like do it with
us.
So.
What is your nerd moment, Gino? I want to know.
My nerd moment is they're doing it again. They're telling and not showing. I think if this was a two-part episode, we wouldn't have had to have this 1 minute of Tom saying, we woke up, I saw Harry, he had his suit off, he could breathe, I could breathe, everything was fine, we felt great. I really wanted to see that, because he also mentioned that he couldn't communicate. Okay, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't watched the episode, this isn't really Tom Paris.
Another doppelganger.
Well, the thing that I want to say that the reason they did that, Gino, and I'm not defending it because they could have done something interesting with it, but this is their way of concealing their little third act twist.
Right, right. Well, in that third act twist, it's the planet kind of cloning them or whatever. How perfect did it make these copies? Did it make them with their environmental suits on? I guess they did, because when he woke up, Harry had his helmet off already. Okay. So they've taken off the environmental suits, whatever. Did it copy the comm badge exactly the same, too? Did the planet know something about that and say, don't try to communicate the ship because we don't know if it's going to work and we're trying to hide the fact that we're copies right now?
Well, if we're going to spoil it, then it's not the planet, it's the metal, the liquid
right,
metal.
Right, 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 it's the metal, yeah.
Well, you do bring up some questions that I've never really thought of before, Gino. I mean, we find out at the end in the oh-so-wonderful monologue that we have a clip of later that they were able to replicate through DNA. That's what we find out how.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they replicate. Mm-hmm. So you do bring up an interesting point, like, because I don't know, would the DNA be on the outside of the environmental suits? I guess they would if they put them on.
Well, it went inside the environmental suits when it first went into them. We see
right.
it disappear.
Right. Well,
so it would have cloned them naked. They wouldn't have had clothes. Unless Starfleet uniforms have DNA.
DNA is just a semblance of carbon and other types of molecules. The organic molecules, and you can use those same organic molecules rearranged to make any number of other organic products like cotton or something to that nature. And maybe you could use the metal that it is already as, you know, primary substance to make the comlinks and the pips and anything else, the boot loops and everything else that you might have questions about. So I think it's within reason to go with.
Unfortunately, we kind of have to because...
Because DNA is made out of the same basic building blocks that every other organic substance is made out of. So, yeah, if you rearrange those molecules into the right way, then sure. But, I mean, the process of doing it, sure, that's obviously, you know, something beyond our believability because we have no idea how to do it. But it does happen. So,
Right. Nature. Well
so
yeah.
Therefore, let's go with it. It's fine.
No, but I just want to give Gino credit. I mean, he does have a point, and I would just say that it's very possible that the writers of this episode didn't know either, so this is their way of not having to explain it.
Just stepping over I don't want to call it a plot hole. It just stepping over an explanation that they could have made but didn't and said, let's move on. And apparently it works.
It's not a plot hole, it's a plot contrivance.
Well, sure. You know, there's other things. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Matt. It's not a plot hole, it's a contrivance.
Yes.
It requires you to infer information from an outside source.
Right.
But I've yet to run into a story without a contrivance, so...
In Star Trek? Really?
Yeah.
Or in many stories, of course.
Or in fiction in general.
Yeah, so.
There's that suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Well, moving right along, in engineering, Vorik informs B'Elanna that the environmental systems will fail in 2 hours. He says it calmly, and B'Elanna comments on it. He notes that losing their cool will not help. It's a phrase he learned from Paris, or, you know, Arthur Fonzarelli.
And you were going to say about this scene earlier, Ben, you had a comment on it?
Oh, with Vorik and B'Elanna?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that Tom has come so far that, you know, B'Elanna is recommending his advice to the younger officers, and that somebody like a Vulcan's taking Tom's advice to be cool.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting, I guess. I don't know.
I just had a moment of clarity here. This episode was directed by Potsy, right?
I just told you that, yeah.
Right. Of course everybody's talking about being cool. I'm surprised they didn't have a jukebox on Voyager and somebody go, "Hey, now we're going to fly Voyager over a shark on skis."
Yeah, I just need to remind everybody that B'Elanna's currently going through the death of all her Maquis friends, that tragic incidences right now, so I think that's secretly weighing on her somewhere. Inside.
Yeah, we do have to remember that because we're going to run into that early next season.
Hey, she had a baby with an SS soldier, okay? I think she can handle all of her peeps dying.
We'll see.
Well, you say that, but we're coming up on season 5, and there's a really good episode, but...
Okay, well, the surface crew meets Harry, and he wants to take all the deuterium, just all of it. Let's pack it all up, put it in the back, and, you know, check out at the register. We can go whenever.
And, put it in the trunk.
Yeah. Chakotay, however, is a little more focused on getting him out of there. He hails the ship and says to the to have the doctor standing by. He's going to want to take a look at Tom and Harry. So things are starting to pan out here. There's some weirdness. Moving on, the doctor illuminates sickbay and gives Neelix the boot. It's checkout time and there's no more room in the inn. Patients are on the way and Neelix snaps too. He hustles his fellow squatters out and then thanks the doctor for letting them stick around.
Well, you know, this is the end of that little subplot, but I will say to the doctor's credit, he's very happily ushering them out there, but then again, that was part of the rental agreement between those two.
Right.
It was. And the Neelix part, well, this is a little weird thing here I got. So Neelix is like, emergency, or doctor says emergency evacuation, and Neelix goes, "Well, what's the situation?" He's like, "Lieutenant, you know, he's not upset. He's not like really hustling until he hears that it's Paris and Kim on their way to the to sickbay there." I don't know if you caught that. Like, he had a moment's hesitation where he wanted to kind of say, "Well, what type of emergency situation are we talking about here?" But as soon as he heard it was his buddies, he was out. So Neelix isn't 100% altruistic, but it is still, he does have the right attitude, right? So that's cool.
Yes, and I'm not questioning that Neelix is genuine. I mean, he's on and through, but the conspiracy theorist in me did have a little bit of a moment of, is he just trying to get the last word here? After all their, you know, bickering back and forth, is he taking the quick way out and saying, "I apologize for acting like a child"?
I sure hope so, Gino. That would be so much better if that was the truth.
Gino, do me a big favor and just, I want you to keep a running tally of all these conspiracies, and when we get to the last episode and we do our wrap-up for the whole series, I want you to take us down through each and every one and see how it played out in your mind.
I'm writing them on the brick wall as we speak.
Oh, okay. Those keep getting repainted, but sorry.
I got them in the noggin here. It's all right.
It's all up there. It's like Cisco. It's real.
I was just going to say thank
you. It's real.
It's real.
Well, the away team beams aboard, and Tom and Harry immediately begin to suffocate. The doctor, fortunately, recreates the planet's atmosphere in sickbay and begins to study them.
Captain's log supplemental. The doctor continues to investigate Tom and Harry, whose condition seems as serious as it is strange.
That stuff is in our blood? I'm afraid so. From what I can tell, you've been bioformed.
Bioformed?
Think of it as the opposite of terraforming. In the same way we adapt the environment of a planet to suit our needs, this planet has adapted you.
How is that possible?
This fluid somehow entered your bloodstream and began altering your physiology at the cellular level. I haven't had the time to analyze the substance, but I hope to have some answers soon.
I'd like to run a few tests of my own, if you don't mind.
Of course.
So, what's our prognosis, Doc?
Well, you'll be fine. As long as you keep breathing the planet's gases.
You mean we have to stay inside this force field?
I'm afraid it's worse than that. The atmosphere of this planet can't be replicated safely.
Which means, if we leave, we'll have nothing to breathe.
Exactly. Either we find a way to treat your condition, or you'll have to be left behind.
Well, things are getting bad.
They are getting bad. And so I just love that I watch Star Trek because it makes me just learn to appreciate other things like Futurama. That made great jokes about stuff like this because the doctor goes, "You've been bioformed," and everybody, you know, just goes, "What is that? That's not real." And then they say, "Stop. Okay, it's something crazy, but here I have a very good analogy for you that makes a lot of sense." Where the doctor's like, "Stop. It's just like being terraformed. You see how it's just a similar thing? It's like a great way Star Trek explains nonsense.
Like putting too much air in a balloon."
Yes.
Or like a balloon and something bad happens.
Yeah, you know, and that's just, but I love that. It's so, just so ridiculous, but it makes me laugh.
By the way, just in response to your little chat there, I do watch Futurama. I own a lot of Futurama.
I actually just started a rewatch.
Oh, good.
It's all on Netflix.
Thank you all.
I love that show. And the writers are huge fans of Star Trek. They're Star Trek throughout the entire show.
There's references galore.
The very first episode starts out with a Star Trek-ish themey kind of music.
Well, sure, and you know the whole, even down to the sound effects of the doors opening in that series. It's the original series swish sound.
Right.
Yeah. True. So, but that just makes me like that scene. It's stupid, ridiculous, but it makes me laugh.
Well, it's our BS science of the week. Like this is a hallmark of Star Trek. By the time we get to this point in the course run, and you know it's kind of fun. It's silly and stuff like that. I'm kind of glad we jettisoned it with recent Star Trek, but, you know,
we dumped the core on that one, didn't we?
Well, speaking of dumping cores, save that for the Insurrection podcast.
Yes. Well, Janeway suggests another team goes down to investigate, and Harry volunteers to go out and help because Harry's got weevils!
Of course.
But the doctor agrees, but wants to keep one of them. Harry volunteers.
Just one of the Weibos? That's not good.
Yeah. We're just going to keep half of that.
Okay.
But we find out this isn't even Harry Kim.
Still, Harry Kim.
Well, you know, I mean, he runs, he's like, you know, he's on the planet, and he's like, "What do you guys see?" And they're all like, "You know, see crap." And what do I see? Something beautiful. I have to admit, you know, living in the desert, many times people come up and they go, "What is this piece of crap you live in?" And I just say, but you look around, it's so beautiful.
No, but you know?
And they're like, "No, it's not. It's just a bunch of dirt and sand and dead things." I'm like, you got to see the subtleties.
But I'm with you, though. There are some beautiful parts of both Phoenix and Tucson.
Not the cities, the desert, the heat.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Cacti, and there's the sand.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about, Ben, like Sabino Canyon area, that sort of stuff.
I'm talking about when you get in that beautiful transitionary zone between a riparian area and, you know, pinyon forest and some juniper, low elevation, mid elevation changes.
By the way, Gino, you shouldn't be talking. All you got is wind sweeping down your plane.
And the sand.
Yeah, Oklahoma's a great place back in the day. The Dust Bowl. Dust Bowl.
Oh, yes. You know where all that dust came from? Arizona.
You know, a lot of it probably came from the Sahara Desert, but that has nothing to do with demon planets.
That's right, because on the ship, Janeway and B'Elanna are investigating the metallic substance, and B'Elanna mentions it would probably taste better than Neelix's soup. They notice, though, it has proteins, and when they try to investigate another piece, it slides onto B'Elanna's thumb. You guys, these special effects. you guys.
Yeah. They're not. Ben, you and I have been complimentary on some of the special effects from 90s television on Voyager before, but this was not very good.
No, it was not. Well, the piece slides back off and recreates B'Elanna's thumb. So immediately, Janeway and B'Elanna know what's going on and burst out of the lab.
Of course they do. But I will say, Gino, special effects may be bad, but it's not nearly as bad as when that guy fell off the space elevator. Nothing has gotten that bad at all.
No, this is just Odo without like any texture to it because it's just one sheen and one color. It's not that different than Odo.
If you ever wanted to see Odo's full potential, watch the episode Chimera.
Oh yes.
Wonderful episode.
Yeah.
I would say that's probably my favorite episode of DS9. But we're talking about Voyager. And we're talking about the surface of a class-wide demon planet on which Harry's found something. It's Tom and Harry in their environmental suits! But just then a puddle's growing under Voyager, and it's getting pulled in. Tuvok calls down to the surface for an emergency ascent. Chakotay says 5 to beam up, and Tuvok goes, huh? Harry, though, doesn't want to go back, and says he belongs there.
Harry runs away, screaming like a sissy.
Any of you who have seen Austin Powers, when Seth Green runs out like a little girl, that's what I was picturing. You'll never be my real dad, Chakotay. That was a great moment.
We've talked about Harry's huevos this whole episode, but this is where it all starts falling apart.
Yeah, I think he revoked his man card at that moment.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking in his performance because.
Let's save this for the monologue because that's where we'll talk about the performance as a whole. All right.
Okay. Well, Janeway puts her foot down and says, "Let's get the heck out of here." But the ship isn't going anywhere. It's being submerged by the metallic substance. And because of their attempt to get out of there, the thrusters are now offline. And it'll take a half hour minimum to get repaired.
It's like quicksand. The more you struggle, the more you sink.
Right. So Janeway, just off the top of her head, says, why don't we try a Nadion burst and see what can happen? And she runs down to the sickbay. Tom and Harry are alive, and Copy Tom has all of his traits and memories. And the doctor even gets a little moment there of, like, Mr. Paris is a jerk, as usual, which plays into my theory that he's jealous that Paris and B'Elanna get to be together.
This isn't the real Paris. He can use this one as a punching bag so that the real Paris doesn't even know what he's thinking.
Oh, why not? I bet he injected him with all sorts of hypo sprays. Because you're a copy. Well, let's see what happens. Well, that killed him. Okay, he's alive again. What about this one? Oh, that killed him, too.
It's a showdown now between Paris and Janeway.
That's right.
No, Kim and Janeway. Oh, wait, it's Paris first, then Kim, never mind.
Yeah, they have a moment. And Janeway wants information. And Copy Tom just really wants to go home.
I just don't belong here, man. I just don't need to be here, man. I'm so claustrophobic and contained.
You know what?
In the heat. And the cacti.
You know what, though? At least this time when he tells Janeway he doesn't belong, at least he has his tongue.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He was just missing some sandals and some long hair with dreadlocks. Then he'd be great.
But you know what I'm referring to. The last time he gave this monologue, he had no tongue.
I like pizza.
Pizza. Okay, well, Janeway is heading to the transporter room and has the pad prepared for Copy Harry. They beam aboard, and he begs that they stop the Nadion burst because they need Voyager.
I want some answers.
I'm trying to understand. This is hard for me as well.
You said you have a connection to this planet. You talk about it like it's alive.
Alive? Yes. But not the planet. The silver blood.
The compound that sampled Harry's DNA. And created you.
Yes. But it's never been conscious. Never sentient. Before now. Before me and the other.
Tom, Paris.
We're the first. Don't you see? You came here. You showed us. When the compound came in contact with Tom and Harry, it experienced awareness for the first time. Before, it was only instinct. Sound and light and heat. But those two showed us thought.
I'm beginning to understand. The silver blood experienced sentience. And now you want more. You want to duplicate the rest of this crew and populate this planet.
You're trying so hard to reach home, but this can be home.
Not for me. And not for my people. Do you understand why we can't stay here?
I think so.
Well, then release us.
We'd rather die than be alone. We deserve life.
The end! That's it! They have one little shot of the ship taking off with the copy of the crew on the ground. Episode over.
Okay,
that's why I wanted two pieces.
Now's the time.
Now's the time for what? Oh, for Harry Kim?
Yes.
You know time. What's funny is by drawing so much attention such to yourself, whether it's negative or positive, I still somehow get really invested in what's being said. And I like that this happens, this final twist. I thought that was really nice. I mean, they have been tricking us this whole time. I mean, we spoiled it way early, but I don't think right. that many people would have got that at first. I know they gave us a little foreshadow with Seven, but for the most part, people aren't going to really catch on that it's the Silver Blood and that Ascension and the whole story. This is too much to catch on to. I thought it was all well done. It was terribly performed, but I say terribly, guys, because, I mean, whether you agree audibly what it was bad or not, I mean, audibly spoken, it's not terrible, but the facial reactions and the body language is just it's so wooden and choppy, and there's no feeling behind it. It's like all very mechanical, and it just smacks of a rehearsal. I don't like it.
It feels like high school playish to me.
Yeah, it does. It takes you right out of it, and you know. But that being said, what is being said is a cool concept. I think that's neat. I mean, with Star Trek, always has to do ascensions, like find a new life, and that's our whole thing, right? Like seek out new life, new civilizations, and all that, and. This is what we're doing. I think it's a unique way they did it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Close your ears for like 5 seconds, because I know you haven't seen a lot of Voyager beyond this point, and I don't want to spoil something for you, but I got to ask a question of Ben.
Oh, okay. Don't spoil it, because it's
too good. I'm not going to, but
all right.
Ben, I agree this is a cool concept. I'm just going to say this at this point, though. I think the follow-up to this is much better.
Yeah, finally, a two-parter is better on a second end. I mean, geez, so there you go, right?
That's all I wanted to say. I was wondering if you were going to
say that
the follow-up is much better.
Maybe that's why I'm a little bit more interested and invested in this on rewatch because I do know what comes later and it's a shock. And I thought this was well done, so I think I think this is really a good storyline. I think it's my deal.
I enjoyed it. Whole thing. Enjoyed it a lot. I wish it would have been two parts though, because you have a lot of story here. There were a lot of parts that they told us because they just didn't have time, so they had to surmise it. But I mean, we ended the show with the entire crew on the ground. I don't even want to talk about the violation of the Prime Directive.
Well,
because that's a huge deal.
Yeah, but it happened, you know? It happened. A life was created. It was like it'd be like finding Data on the planet after the crystalline entity, and here's Ascension Life. I mean, do you leave him here, or he's all by himself, or do you do what you should do, Ascension Life, and make them part of the community? And I think that, you know, it wouldn't be fair. I mean, they said they'd rather die than be alone. I mean, that would be the same for a lot of people, you know, that not to have a society to share and a culture to create. You know, people want that and need that and crave it. So it's part of what drives us to be better people, you know? So I think that's a cool concept. And I know they leave them here, but
it's a very cool concept, but it's a gray area in the Prime Directive.
The Prime Directive is nonsense. It's for like an established civilization that doesn't have warp drive yet, so we don't go in there and be bullies and colonize them.
With the knowledge of warp drive, this collective crew could eventually find a way off the planet.
Well,
but if anything, it's a front towards God and creation and religion. That's more of a front towards that than it is the prime directive. Okay. The fact that we can just happenstance create life. I mean, that's more that.
I can't believe there's a shouting match on this week's Delta Quadrant that I'm not involved in.
Don't worry, dude. It's cool, man. Whatever. Let that prime directive go. It should be the stupid directive. I don't like it at all.
The stupid directive.
Well, Gino,
to
not spoil anything, I'll just say, remember this episode. That's okay. All I'll say.
I will remember this episode.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, because I was wondering if you would.
It's a good thing you did enjoy it, because all I'm saying is remember this episode.
Okay. All right. I'm very happy.
All right, Charles Dickens. Foreshadow and all.
That's all I can do, okay?
I know, I get it. You can't stand, I get it. Patience. It'll come. Payoff will be there. So, all right. That was good. I'm glad you liked it, though.
Oh, yes. You're sounding like you wrote it.
I'm glad you liked it.
I'm really glad you had a good time.
Actually, you know what, Ben? It's funny you say that, because just to spoil a little behind the scenes, Gino had told me when I first got on here that he really liked this episode, but he's like, I wonder how Ben's going to feel about it. I'm kind of nervous he won't like it.
I had a feeling you were going to bash this episode, so I'm glad you spoke about it as positively as you have.
This is Star Trek, Gino. This is Star Trek.
Man, I'm glad you said that. This is so Star Trek.
Well, let's save that for the final thoughts, which is now, because that's the end of the episode, right?
That's it. Because it's not a two-parter. Dang it.
That's funny.
I'm gonna keep mum on that. Gino, since you're so dying to talk about it, why don't you go first on final thoughts and ratings for Demon?
I loved this episode. It was Star Trek-y. I don't want to say it was so well written. There were some things that were told instead of said that I wish I would have had more of. But an episode that leaves me wanting more, that's a great episode. That makes me want to watch more of this show. I was incredibly entertained. The story was fun. The characters were well used. I want to see more of Alana, but I think Roxanne Dawson's kind of getting back into the swing of things right now. Overall, had a great time. I'd love to see it again. 4.5 stars.
Whoa.
Wow. You really had a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Ben.
I'm not as enthusiastic as Gino, I guess, going, you know. But I even remember kind of seeing this the first time and really, because it's a really tricky episode, you know, it gets you going several ways. And so I always kind of remember that there's something else going on. And I always like those. So I like to rewatch them. So definitely a rewatchable episode. And I don't really like the Tom and Harry stuff very much, character pairing wise. I did like Dr. Neelix and Neelix Tuvok. That's all good stuff. You say not enough Torres. I kind of agree, but you know, I'm glad that Janeway is not as big of a role and Seven's not a big role either. I'm glad we're getting some spread, you know, spreading the spotlight here. We haven't had a lot of Janeway Seven recently, so I liked it a lot. It's a good episode. I give it a 4.
Oh, I'm gonna. Well, it's funny because I didn't know how I felt about the episode. I mean, I liked it. I did like it. I don't know if I would be as enthusiastic as Gino is. It's good, but not spectacular. And I think, how do I word this? Future knowledge of events colors my view of this episode a little bit. But that
that's
being
not
said,
necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not. But I'm just saying it does because I can't help it because I know what's coming down the road. But that being said, it's a well acted with the exception of that terrible monologue at the end. But for the most part, it's well acted. At least Harry gets, you know, some huevos this episode. They get checked right back in, though. But after this is done. It's solid. It's solid, and I had a good time, and I didn't hate watching it, and it's a good story too. It's an interesting concept, and I will say it's Star Trek-y. It's not quite a 4 for me, but it's so close, so I'm gonna break my rules a little bit and give it a 3.9.
Okay. Rules. Okay. You know, think about it this way. It's okay to rate it like that because you know, normally a Harry Kim epicentric episode is just going to get trashed, right? It'd be crap. And the fact that it is that and it's still entertaining, like you said, shows the quality, even though it has a big chink in the armor.
Oh, right. I agree, but
the Hero Crest this week. I mean, it was a Harry-centered episode, and all except for the monologue at the end. I mean, he held his own.
Unfortunately,
but unfortunately, some of the stuff toward the end really killed it for me, and that's why it's a 3.9.
When he ran away like a sissy, it all went downhill.
And think about that time with, you know, this is our complaint with him and Chakotay. They both have these big monologues at the end of scenes. I mean, think about when Picard would have a monologue at the end of the scene. I mean, that like sold the episode for you, right?
Yes.
It almost whimpers. The ending almost whimpers. Really, truly a great episode.
We don't even need to compare it to other series. Even when Janeway has a monologue at the end, sometimes it's great, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do agree. I mean, she's definitely better. But she tried to help out in there. I mean, she had some passion, but
For me, that's what makes the scene not a total waste and painful.
Sure.
Okay, so who would have done it better?
Oh. I know
because of the situations, because of the show, the only other person logically they could have done in this episode would have been Tom Paris.
They could have used Vork.
Well, I'm just talking about because of the way this show went with all the characters as they exactly were. But
I think
had it been different, had it been completely different and they could have used any actors, let's keep Janeway in her spot because I think she needs to be the one having that talk to that alien speaking for its entire race, to speak. Who would have done better in this part?
Can I just be honest with you? Like, I do think that, and Ben probably won't agree with me, but I do think that Tom could have done it. I mean, the one dynamic I find in this rewatch of Voyager that I really like is the Janeway-Tom dynamic and how that evolves throughout the course of the series. I do like their interplay. So I think I would have been okay with those two actors performing that scene.
Yeah, I would have liked, I mean, I do have a hesitation when it comes to putting McNeil on the spot that you don't have, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, I don't really like going. So an episode that I thought did a great actor did a great job in a very similar type of episode was the episode Tuvix. And so that guest actor did a great job.
That was very good.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, and I know they can't do that same thing again. They got to use one of the characters. Right. I agree. I mean, if you're going to keep the episode what it is, and yeah, I mean, Tom's got to be the dude, but...
Well, of course, because your only choices in this situation were Tom or Harry, but let's say that Tuvok had been copied. The start of the episode, he's super Vulcan, right? Yeah. If the second half, you know, this copy is emotional or whatever, I think that could have been a good scene.
It could have been a good scene, but I think that you need someone who's already emotional to begin with because they need to sell us. Because the initial discussion.
Ross could have pulled it off.
Well,
he's done it before,
okay,
too.
Okay, well, but here's the thing, okay? They want us to, when they first meet the unsuited versions of the duplicates, they want us to buy that they're the same people.
Right.
So having Tuvok be all emotional at that point may have been.
Okay.
It would take them more time to develop.
That would have taken a
Yeah, it would take time Granted, to develop properly.
They could have used that time to do other things that they told instead of showed in this episode.
Yes, I'm saying it.
Solid one episode.
Yeah, the way you're setting up this hypothetical game is we keep everything about the episode the same, the structure, the story, all that sort of stuff. Nothing else changes except who we put in there as the duplicate. So, and to be honest with you,
I think that's a reason that we don't do stuff like that on this show.
Well, yes, of course.
Oh, yes. Oh,
of course. But
trying to make things better. But it is funny, though. I mean, an episode like this, it does sometimes think, you do sometimes think that just the smallest of tweaks would make it one of the great episodes. It's just missing, like, some piece, some little flavor. I mean, I get the temptation to try to monkey it around, but the truth is, in the end, you know, it's a quality episode, a quality written.
Yes.
And all the holes and the bad things have been rewritten to this product here. I mean, this is the final product. And it's pretty good. I agree. I mean, like...
It's 4.5 stars good, my friend.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, maybe putting Tom in the role would be fine, but, you know, they can't always do that. So I think
Garrett Wong held his own this episode.
I understand. I wouldn't go that far.
I'm not going to even say that was the best he could do, but I think he did well. Comparing other scenes we've seen him in, especially the other Harry-focused episodes when it just fell flat, this episode was enjoyable.
Yeah, it's taken him 4 years.
Yes, I could sit through this one.
Halfway decent. That's an accomplishment.
Favorite son this is not, thank God.
No, this is way not.
But that being said, I mean, it's an interesting hypothetical to think about, and all I'll say on that point is, at least for me, I'm finding through this rewatch of Voyager how much I actually really like the character Tom Paris more than I thought I did. So I guess I'm willing to give him much more of the benefit of the doubt than you are, Ben, because I'm just discovering how much I actually like this guy and never really realized it before.
I
think it's more of a matter that he and Roxanne Dawson have a good chemistry. So as a couple, they're working them out on the show, and on any procedural show, it makes sense to have two of your characters get together, yada yada, but Tom Paris is a better bachelor.
I don't think so, because this is a debate that we can have on a later episode when we're not, like, having to take up editing time. All I'll say at this point is I think they were able to explore much more different facets of his character by making him a coupled person. Because I did very much like him in the early seasons, but he was kind of like, for me, in the early seasons, I liked him, but he was kind of like the Kirk and Riker redux. Like, of the young...
Well, he's not a wild kid anymore. Here's the thing. When the show started, most of our crew, the actors, were still kind of young. In this couple of years, I mean, we're only in season 4 here. It's been a few years, and most of them are acting like adults. I mean, Harry Kim even says, I was a kid when I first got here, and I grew up.
Yeah, well, I don't buy that line reading either, because I still think of him as a kid, because...
And then he runs off.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't leave me up!
Exactly, but, you know, I don't know. This is a discussion we can have later. It's an interesting one, though.
Hello, everybody. We have some last-minute feedback that we would like to get in on this podcast here. It's a audio file, a review from Brian Baker, part of the Loot Trek Show, on the episode Vis-a-Vis. So, enjoy. And remember, Brian, you're wrong.
Hello, Delta Quadrant crew. Please excuse the scratchiness in my voice. I'm catching a cold, but I wanted to read to you my review of Vis-a-Vis, rather than having one of you read it because it's so long, so I will read this myself, bullet point style. This episode is Vis-a-Vis. I think a better name would have been Throwing Tom a Gargantuan Bone. Tom's 20th century fixation has, by this point, officially dragged on ad nauseam, a reference to Paris turning the holodeck into a garage and fondling a 1967 Camaro. The holodeck bookends the beginning and end of this episode. I hate bookends. Star Trek seems to use them more as a crutch than a tool, meaning it's just tedious filler. Janeway summons Paris to the bridge. I'm surprised he could be bothered. Upon taking the helm, Paris pulls out of his ass an all-new theory of the week, coaxial warp. The Voyager meets Steth, whose coaxial cable drive has conked out, and he needs their help in fixing it. This is where Tom's bone gets gargantuan. Guess what? Tom knows old cars. Tom knows about theoretical coaxial warp drives. Tom has occasional engineering spats with B'Elanna, and Tom even draws inspiration from the Titanic to develop transverse bulkheads in Year of Hell. I guess this makes Paris a bona fide engineer, while the finest engineers in Starfleet were asleep in history class during the event of the Titanic. The whole point of Vis-a-Vis' prologue is to showcase what a crack mechanic Tom is supposed to be this week. You would think such monumental leaps in brilliance would be allotted to Kim, Torres, Carrie, Vorik, or in a Jerry Taylor script, Janeway. Advanced subspace geometry was the one course at the Academy where Paris paid attention? What does this imply? That he got poor marks and everything else? Then I'm surprised he didn't drop out of the Academy along with Torres. Paris then goes to Commander Tay's office all weepy over an alien he's only known for 10 minutes. Oh, he's so bored. Oh, he's so pitiful. Tom is the most laid-back, fun-loving, thrill-seeking, skirt-chasing, wisecracking, holodeck-monopolizing, and fancy-free crew member. For him to whine to Chaco about needing a change of pace? Poor baby. Tom tells Steth that he crashed his father's shuttle in Lake Tahoe. Don't tell Harry that, or he might give Kim poetic justification to start making cracks at the best pilot's driving record. Just wait until Spirit Folk. Neelix cameos in his own series and speaks just long enough to draw a full week's salary. Thank you, Matt, for pointing out the similarity of Vis-a-Vis to Turnabout Intruder, because if you and your shipmates didn't, I would, as I just did. And thank you, Matt, for not rating this episode that high. I found myself agreeing with everything you found dissatisfying or disappointing about this episode. I'm glad Gino caught the subtext of Harry's golfing remark. Ensign Kaplan won't know what hit her. Is this another Ensign Kaplan? The last Kaplan that didn't know what hit her resulted in unity. Are the Kaplans twins? Steth Tom employs not once, but twice, the female incapacitation attack on the standard female grab area. This is a trope where an action girl, like Ms. Torres or Ms. of Nine, by grabbing one or both of their arms, can turn them into damsels in distress. In B'Elanna's case, submissive. While in Seven's case, defiant but compliant. We all know both the women could have easily broken Steth Tom's hold on them and inflict massive injury on him, especially Seven, if she wanted to, and I believe that she did, but she didn't. So major awesomeness to her. Instead, she goes to the captain to report on Tom how he violated her. Go to TVTropes.org for more information on the standard female grab area. For Paris to convince Chakotay that he's the real Tom, Paris repeats what Chaco said to him earlier in the episode about how Tom has become a better person. I guess that was for the short attention span audience. I would have preferred Tom had remembered a more intimate shared experience, like the one they had on the Ocampan staircase. Tom says, "Can't you change yourself into a bird and fly us out of here?" Chaco says, "You're too heavy." It's not until the climax does Steth Janeway play the
"Kill me, and if you kill me, you'll be trapped in those bodies forever"
card. And Tom, Steth says, "Yeah, but there's nothing keeping him from killing us." Steth Janeway should have thought of that instead of leaving Tom at the mercy of the Benthans. Today's secret word is carburetor. Tom uses that BS explaining using 20th century tools to solve 20th century problems. I call it lazy writing and insulting the show's core demographics intelligence. When Tom was in L.A. in the 20th century, he should have been left there. That way he could have hooked up with Rain Robinson, who seemed a better soulmate for Tom in the first place. As for the epilogue, Tom tells B'Elanna that he's been working in the holodeck on his Camaro all this time, this episode only, as his way of letting her into his life, and as a way of getting close to her. Sorry, not buying it. 2 stars for this episode that suffers from too much Tom. I can already hear Melissa asking, is there such a thing as too much Tom? Matt, you said the episode Unforgettable is coming up. Isn't that a poor choice of titles? Come to think of it, so was the episode Remember. Thanks, Voyager Bunch. Catch you later. Signed, Brian Baker, a.k.a. The Android.
Well, that was a much better podcast than the last time the three boys talked together. It was much more peaceful, at least.
I think we worked a little bit better together this time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Melissa won't be as disappointed when she comes back out of the brig. But until next time, when Melissa is released from the brig, this is Matt from Arizona closing Hailing Frequencies.
Yeah, this is Ben in Arizona saying goodnight.
And this is Gino in Oklahoma with the sand and the cacti and the heat.
Thanks for listening to the Delta Quadrant. Please join us again next week. Star Trek Voyager and the Voyager theme song are the property of CBS Television Studios, and no infringement is intended.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
Thank you.
turned away from it all like a blind man. Sat on the fence, but it don't work.
Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn. Pressure.